It's Thursday, September the 21st, 2017. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Well, good evening from a wonderfully cool and beautiful evening in Colorado Springs. I am thankful and excited to be taking a couple vacation days to attend my 25th reunion at the Air Force Academy, which makes me feel like a very old person. And we are kind of separated family-wise because Friday is a parent-teacher conference day that my wife cannot miss. And so rather than take the 11-hour drive with stops with the girls and I, she's going to get to fly into Denver on Saturday and then take her first Ubers from, to the Oklahoma City airport in the morning, and then from the Denver airport to Golden, where our son is, and he's supposed to do a jazz concert in the morning. So anyway, we are supposed to rendezvous on Saturday for the Air Force San Diego football game. And so I was actually not planning to do a podcast, but as I often do on long car trips, I was able to listen to a number of podcasts today, as well as music and talking and thinking, and I actually don't mind long trips at all. It is a great thing to have somebody else, at least one person in the family, to share the driving. So we got to have Sarah share some driving. But I sketched out some ideas for this EdTech Struggles and Aspirations podcast, and I almost did this from the road, but I wasn't able to quite get things quiet enough as far as road noise with microphones and things. And then I ended up driving the last leg on the two-lane, which is, you know, we're not going to be podcasting at that point. So anyway, I'm recording tonight. And what I'd like to talk about are really three different things that I say I'm struggling with. I mean, it's not, you know, harsh, terrible, difficult struggle, but I'm definitely aspiring to move in these areas and to figure some things out. And so the first one I'm calling cultivating a learning culture of creativity. The next one has to do with the after school STEAM studio that I'm doing with our wonderful elementary art teacher, Megan Thompson, called Playful Puppets, or I guess it's called STEAM Studio, but talking about moving students into a real, you know, open-ended, expressive, and creative, mindset and behaviors. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. And then lastly, it'll be the real geeky one, talking about some of the IT director things that I am learning about and, working on, perhaps struggling with, but I mean, it's more, you know, trying to work on, from fiber upgrades to lots of cameras on our network and dealing with bandwidth and, you know, accountability for students and teachers and deep packet inspection and all kinds of probably acronyms to talk about. So that's the outline. I'm not sure exactly how long this will go, but here we start with EdTech Struggles and Aspirations. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is the aspirational challenge of cultivating a learning culture at school where creativity, innovation, whimsy, and cross-curricular connections are happening, you know, frequently and are a common part of the experience of not only teachers but also students. I think it's pretty interesting that many of our highly successful independent and private schools, and I've had more opportunity to work with those kinds of schools in the late 2000s in East Asia, going to mainland China three times and Hong Kong once. And, you know, it can be a real challenge when you've been traditionally successful preparing students to gain admission to selective universities and to be able to do well at those universities, to think about, you know, why should we change? Why is change needed? And so one of the things that are, essentially academic dean. I think his official title is perhaps assistant headmaster for academics. Josh Bottomley has talked about is, you know, for our school wanting to be a school that still has big T tradition, but also has big I innovation, and having those two things come about simultaneously. And so, I have some additional insight into our school and experiences of students on a couple levels. Our daughter, Rachel, was in the seventh grade at our school, Cassidy School in Oklahoma City, this last year, and started her eighth grade year, and just really had a fantastic year. But of course, you know, being able to see things as a parent and in part through the eyes of your own child gives you additional insight into a school culture that you don't necessarily have when you're a teacher or a staff member or both administrator. And so the other thing that this year has brought that's different, is my wife, teaching third grade at our school. And so, we have a pretty traditional, regimen of curriculum and activities for our students, at the elementary level. And, you know, it's exciting to be a part of a group at our school, and of course more broadly beyond our school, that really is trying to encourage innovation and creativity and multidisciplinary approaches to education, maker education, STEAM and STEM learning, and just a variety of innovations that can open up new opportunities for students to not only learn, but also become empowered. You know, this is something I've really been, I guess, centering myself and my thinking about more in the last year. And that is, empowerment, empowering people. My spiritual director, I have an opportunity, basically once a month to meet with a wonderful, wonderful, man. And he leads a group in Oklahoma City called Heart Paths. And it's, actually is based a lot on, I'm gonna skip the name because I didn't write this down. A monastic tradition, which, maybe it's gonna come to me a little bit later. But anyway, the reason you meet and one of the biggest purposes is to discern where God is working in your life and to be able to see these things. And one of the things that he's helped me, you know, realize, and I agree with, you know, and see is that, you know, part of my identity and my mission in life is really to empower people to be who they are supposed to be and to do what they're supposed to do. And I think that in many traditional educational situations, where there's a high degree of focus on authority, on the teacher as, you know, the dispenser of information and knowledge, and where students are expected to primarily operate in an independent situation where they're being told what to do, you know, given the instructions on what to do and then graded on what they do. Empowerment is not necessarily, you know, a big part of that environment. And so one of the things that was really fantastic at the beginning of this school year, we had a consultant come in and work on a project called Portraits of a Graduate. And it gave opportunity for teachers as well as administrators at our school, staff at our school, to aspirationally brainstorm and discuss what are the characteristics that we see our graduates having and want our graduates to have. In fact, in part of this, it was great. We had recent graduates come back and participate in some small group discussions. And so anyway, out of that, you know, came a lot of discussion about where we want to see our school go and how we want to see our culture, you know, change. And some of those things involve wellness and balance. You know, we are a school of very, very high expectations. And I won't use the word rigorous because I don't really like that word, the word rigor. But, you know, high expectations, lots of homework, lots of, you know, studying, lots of reading. And there can be a lot of pressure, obviously, that goes with that as well. And so, it's, you know, great to see the high levels of achievement and, you know, the amazing things that our kids are able to do and accomplish and the wonderful, well-rounded people that they're encouraged to become. But it's also great to hear people talk about things like, you know, we need to make sure we're attending to balance, to sleep. We've done some surveys the last couple years. In fact, last year there was this whole series with parents and students and staff, and the feedback from those has, you know, informed and directed some of the directions of what we're doing at school in terms of initiatives. And so I'm so thankful that we are having discussions about mindfulness and discussions about balance and, you know, discussions about, load in terms of student, you know, load that teachers are putting on, et cetera. And so when I say this is an aspirational, you know, struggle, you know, it's something that I definitely have so much, I'm encouraged in so many ways because of, the many people at our school who, you know, want to move our culture forward, not just accept the rich tradition and the, you know, excellence of the past, but also, you know, look at innovation. And one of the areas that we've really been working on this, involves, coding and computer science and overlaps with STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and STEAM, which is adding art to that, so science, technology, engineering, art, and math, and then also maker education. And so I wrote on this little, I just have a short little outline for the podcast tonight, that I want to help and I aspire to cultivate a learning culture of creativity, innovation, whimsy, cross-curricular connections, perhaps cross-cultural ones as well. And so part of what I'm struggling with is just thinking about, you know, in my role as the director of technology, with a very, very limited staff. At this point, we support about 900 students, and then about 170 faculty and staff. And we've got a staff of 2 1/4 people. So myself, another full-time, person, and then a quarter-time, faculty member who helps us out. You know, it's challenging, right? We've got a lot of desktop support and just, you know, kind of tickets of fixing things, right? As every technology department does. But it is wonderful that I have opportunities from time to time to do instructional coaching and work directly with faculty. I'm very excited that one of our upper division high school language teachers, actually French teacher, got to just help her this last 2 weeks with a video project. I think the first one she's done like this, and I'm excited. I don't have a link to put it in show notes tonight, but we should soon either have it on her YouTube channel or the student projects channel that we have for our learning showcase. And anyway, it was just great to be able to work with her just for a little bit, but getting the planning done. There's a video that folks in France and Paris have made to try to entice the Olympic committee and others to bring the Olympics there, I think, in 2024. And it was a simple model where different people said one word, and then there was a shot of that word personified, you know, whether that was amazing food, and then it was, you know, great French cuisine, you know, in a restaurant being shown or whatever. And so she did that with her students, and just got to see that video earlier today that she had finished, and so I helped her set it up where students could. She shot the initial videos on an iPad, but then had students turn in the clips of their scenes, the B-roll scene, if you will, of what their word basically, you know, could be visually interpreted to mean in Google Classroom. And then I coached her so that she could download all that into her iPad and then be able to edit in iMovie. And so anyway, that's great. It's so exciting. It's wonderful to be able to do that. But I have a limited amount of time to do that. And so as I'm able to work with other faculty and, you know, have some insight. There's just great innovation happening in so many different places. But one of the things that I'm really, you know, thankful and appreciative to be able to do, and I'll talk about this next a little more in depth, is to do this after school, STEAM studio. And, you know, the whole, the learning's design cycle that Mitch Resnick talks about, I guess he calls it the creative learning cycle. It's a spiral, where it starts with imagination and then, brainstorming, I think, and then play and then creation and then reflection and then back to imagination. It's a spiral that, that continues. And it's something that I was introduced to because of Scratch and his work in Scratch. And so let me just go ahead and give a shout out right now. If you do not follow Mitch Resnick, who has a very short Twitter ID, it's M-Res, M-R-E-S. Dr. Resnick is the leader of the Lifelong Kindergarten Group at MIT and is the project lead. I don't know exactly the title, but he's the main one responsible for the Scratch programming language, which also now has a Scratch Junior app for iPad and I think Android as well, and the PBS Kids version of Scratch Junior. And so anyway, I have been thinking about, you know, those times that I can invest working with teachers individually, but also the desire I have to to help empower our teachers to be creators and designers of their own curriculum and their own learning activities. Sometimes I think we can be in a place where we've done something for quite a while or something has been done for quite a while, and we may or may not have a large degree of autonomy and opportunity to invent and design and create some new things. My wife told me a story this last week where, I think, was this the book snaps? The kids had done something, I think that involved seesaw, and they were putting some things up on the wall that they had taken pictures of. And anyway, the fourth graders were by and they said, "We didn't do that last year." And they were just, exclaiming because it was something new and it was something different. And I get it. Not everybody is going to want to do something new and different. Change is hard, but I think in general, all of us as educators are not only going to benefit ourselves, but most importantly, we're going to be able to bring benefit and better experiences and opportunities for learning to our students when we are continually learning, when we're continually growing, and when we're open to new ideas. And part of the pedagogy that I really believe in, Mitch Resnick, in his new book on lifelong kindergarten, talks about in depth, is an idea that he actually explained quite well in a podcast that I heard today. And this is part of the reason why I was inspired to talk about this tonight. And I will link this in the show notes. This is an Ed Surge interview that they did with Dr. Resnick. And he talked about the idea of wide walls. And so I've heard him say before, because I've heard Dr. Resnick at our International Technology Conference, the ISTE conference, present and talk about Scratch. I've heard him talk about how Scratch is a wonderful program because it has a low bar and a high ceiling, meaning you really don't have to know a great deal in order to get started. So it's that low bar in order to kind of, walk in the room, but it has a high ceiling. There's so much that you can do. But another essential part of that is what he calls wide walls. And he's saying that means there's not just a single activity and a single pathway to success. And so part of my aspirational struggle, and I think I may actually end up suggesting and even facilitating in our school, a group of folks who would want to take this course that's going to start in October by the MIT Lifelong Kindergarten Group that's going to focus on creative learning. Helping our teachers, and myself too, all of us as teachers and learners, embrace a pedagogy where students are able to create projects and products where we as the teacher don't necessarily define every little aspect of that in advance. And certainly every project and product that students create inside a single classroom do not look the same. And this is something that I've certainly been guilty of doing this, and there are times for all kinds of things. I'm not saying this is something that would be done in every single case, but we've probably all designed and led lessons as teachers, or just taken lessons that we found or have been given to us, where the product is expected to look almost identical for students. And so anyway, that's part of my first aspirational struggle, and I'm really, really energized and excited by this new book. And in fact, I just purchased the Kindle version of it that Dr. Resnick has just published about the pedagogy of the lifelong kindergarten group. And I'm excited about potentially how time invested in sharing that book and that pedagogy and that framework can hopefully have real positive ripple effects within our school community and even beyond in terms of encouraging that kind of culture that I was talking about, a culture very open and supportive of creativity, of innovation, of whimsy, and cross-curricular connections. All right, so the second thing I'd like to talk about is just some reflections, and I'll be briefer here, on moving students into an environment where they can successfully work in a very, very, very open-ended and hopefully creativity-supporting classroom. And we are, as I mentioned, Megan Thompson and I, for the second year leading what we're calling STEAM Studio. This is my third year to be a technology director at Cassidy. The first year that I was there, I, in the fall, co-led what we called a STEM club with the fourth grade, science teacher. And we ended up doing some Minecraft projects, and I think we built catapults and kind of just did some different lessons and activities that I had done as a STEM teacher out in Yukon for fourth and fifth grade students. We did some of those as after school activities. Last year, Megan and I with what we called the STEAM Studio provided different opportunities for students to experiment and build and tinker with different kinds of artistic and, you know, technology tools. With a Makey Makey, we had some kids do some, we kind of did this in stations. We had, you know, kind of a breakdown station where there were some electronics that they were able to take apart. We made art bots. That was probably the main project that we did where everyone was kind of doing a similar project. But we also did some things with, circuits and, it was just, you know, different stations and a lot of different things, different directions. Well, this year, one of the things we talked about, and we had talked about this last year but never did it, was making puppets and the idea of a puppet show and then bringing technology in with some green screen effects and green screen apps and possibly, you know, with some LED lights and circuits and things like that. And so out of that, we really have a short amount of time for this after school club. We only meet 8 times. And so we've had 2 meetings so far. And, if you're interested in seeing, the videos actually that we, created and students created the first week, I'll link those in the show notes. But you can also go to Megan's website, which is seeingnewshapes.cassady, CASADY.org/STEAM. Pardon me. And I think you do need to capitalize STEAM. I think for some reason that web link is case sensitive. Perhaps it's not. But anyway, we had a fairly unruly bunch, and you know, kind of in the second week, first week I think went pretty well, but the second week, I don't know that the kids advanced very, very far beyond where they were before. And I think, and we have had a good chance after class to reflect and talk about this. And that's another thing, by the way, that's just fantastic about getting to do this. This is really a small amount of my time, but, it's a very, you know, special thing for me to be able to, you know, do some teaching and some co-teaching. And that's something else I think is just really can be a wonderful thing. And there's a lot of great, you know, encouragement, inspiration, and value that comes from being able to collaborate with a colleague, you know, in a situation like this. And so anyway, I think it can be very challenging, and part of the challenge we had this last time, you know, when students are, you know, almost the entire day in a very structured, very directed, you know, very not open-ended, you know, kind of environment with learning as far as here's what you are doing next and just, it's, you know, just not very open-ended. I think that the environment we're providing with our STEAM studio is challenging for kids to work in. And so we're going to be talking about that this week. And one of the things we're going to be doing, we set up, four different stations and kids were in groups of three to make videos. And we had just different objects. Some of them were puppets, but some of them were just objects. And we're just talking about, you know, voices and having a little skit and just creating a short little video, using these different characters. And the other, station, the fourth station is a shadow box station. And so Megan has a bunch of LED, you know, powered lamps, kind of like desk lamps, but then has created a frame with, some like wax paper and then being able to shine the light and then, you know, shoot the video where you got the characters behind the shadow box. And so anyway, we're going to this week, focus on making sock puppets. And so we're going to really, one of the things that I believe is that there is value in, recording small projects and doing a lot of recording rather than just waiting till the end. But you know, recording a video, and in this case it's just a puppet video, but there's a lot of moving parts to that and a fair bit of complexity. And in order to get something that's good quality, and what is that? You know, that is what we need to talk about, actually, is what's going to make a good video. You know, we need to kind of break things down into different pieces and talk about them. And so we're going to talk about character, and we're going to use a graphic organizer. And this is going to be a fun little way for me to do my homework, because I have just started I think it's a 4-week class with Tony Vincent called Classy Graphics. And this is an online class where he's publishing one video per week and then giving some optional homework and assignments that participants can do. And so this first week is just really about, and we're using Google Draw to do this, is really just about arranging and aligning and distributing and moving objects around. And so one of the first homeworks is to do a graphic organizer. So when I get that graphic organizer, I'll go ahead and link it in the show notes. I may actually do it tonight. I'm not sure. But I'll put it in the show notes for the podcast. And what Megan and I had brainstormed doing was, you know, having students, they're going to have a sock and they're going to have, you know, some different materials, felt, googly eyes, you know, pipe cleaners, hot glue, other kinds of things to create this puppet character. But we want them to come up with a name for their puppet. And then we're going to ask them to think a little bit about their personality and maybe what motivates them. And then maybe, you know, something about their story, you know, something that'll be unique. And then actually have them start practicing talking with their sock puppet or as their sock puppet and have them interacting with someone else. And this will be before recording. So that'll be a little different because we recorded, you know, and of course they weren't great, right? They were our first week of puppet videos. We recorded some this last week, but I don't know that we really helped students grow or, you know, think a lot about, you know, what they might do differently, in terms of a skit. And part of what we want to do is have them, you know, get into some characters and use some creative voices and, have some interactions. Of course, you always, when you do something like this, are going to have a group, and a lot of times it's boys, you know, they just think it's fun to have things fight. That's what they're going to do. We've got to figure out a way to move beyond that. So anyway, this is fun for me. This is a different kind of challenge. It's not something I'm, you know, I have opportunity to do a whole lot, as far as teaching and, working with students. And I just love you. If you go and see the video, at the very end, we put the two videos that Megan and I did. They're very silly, right? But they're whimsical. And I think there's a lot of value in allowing our silly selves to, you know, kind of come out and encourage that and see where we can go creatively. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how our third session goes this next week. And if you've got any input or thoughts on these kinds of challenges that I'm talking about as far as, you know, helping students move from that very, you know, directed and defined and prescribed kind of learning environment into a much more open, environment, you know, which where they have more choices, and then empowering them to do that. I would love to hear that. All right. So my last, EdTech struggle and aspiration, regards a lot of geeky stuff, but this is stuff I'm really enjoying learning about and, things that I've known about, but I'm certainly learning in a lot more depth. And that involves really lots of things with our network at school. And so, we are, campus of, well, we have about 80 acres and we have 19 different buildings, and we have fiber optic connections that connect all of our buildings. But some of those are older fiber. I think it's 50 micron, and if I don't have this right in front of me, and then the newer fibers like the 62 and a half, you know, fiber. This pushes the limits of my knowledge, because, you know, fiber optic is something, when I worked for AT&T, when that was what brought me to Oklahoma back in the mid-2000s, almost 10 years ago, you know, did a lot of work with schools with E-rate and with connectivity and, you know, talking about these kinds of connections, but I wasn't, you know, the person, you know, responsible for actually working with them. And here, you know, at Cassidy, I've been able to, work with our assistant, technology director and network administrator to, you know, work on our switches and our fiber connections and, be able to have a much greater grasp of those kind of things. Well, some of the challenges that we've had, regard, bandwidth and connectivity speed. We were very fortunate this past April when we hosted an arts festival where over 3,000 students and adults came to our campus that our local service provider, Cox Communications, donated a wonderful upgrade to our speed. And so rather than having, basically 120 combined, megabits of, well, no, that's not right. 300. So we have a fiber connection that is 100 megabits up and down, asymmetric or symmetrical, meaning the same amount of speed up and down. That's our primary internet connection that we've had for years. But we also have a business cable modem, that provides additional, you know, bandwidth and connectivity. And so we basically went from 1.2, was that right? No. Let me get these numbers right. 300 megabytes of downstream bandwidth, okay, to 1.3 gigs. So, you know, it's a factor of 10, increasing that speed. And what's fascinated me for many years about bandwidth, and this, you know, goes back to when I came to Oklahoma back in 2006, that was right at the time where we were continuing this transition, which I think is probably now finished in terms of video conferencing, away from phone line, you know, video conferencing, which back in the day used ISDN lines and in, you know, these different, you know, channels that you would have to connect, over to, IP or internet protocol based, conferences. At that time in 2006, you know, I had more, bandwidth at my house over the cable modem that I had, to be able to video conference than I did when I would go to our video conferencing studio, which was set up mainly to do kind of the old school. And so anyway, it's really, you know, a challenge to obviously keep up with technology in all different kinds of fronts when you see consumer technology advancing so quickly, especially with smartphones, but also, you know, even residential high-speed connection in urban areas. I know that's not the case in rural areas, where, you know, bandwidth is oftentimes not available in, you know, what we would consider high, you know, very high speeds. So anyway, I've been learning about upgrading connections, and one of the things that was great this summer, we have a large number of video cameras on our campus, and that's probably not unusual today, right? We've got a proliferation of surveillance cameras in many, many different places. I had heard years ago that in London, England, you know, you can't walk outside without being on a camera somewhere, that just about every square inch, or maybe it's a square meter of London is under video surveillance. But when you have a lot of video cameras, that creates quite a bit of traffic, you know, on your network. And so, that one of the challenges and things we worked on this past summer was looking at pixelation issues that we were having with some of our cameras. As we're adding new cameras, those cameras are being added with much higher levels of resolution. They're larger cameras that, you know, can zoom in much more and have much greater quality. But that also means there's more bandwidth. And so this summer I realized, you know, that we have about 4 terabits of data from our video cameras each day that go up and down, you know, inside our network, 2 terabytes up and 2 terabytes down. And that's something that we're able to track and see through a dashboard that we have, through Meraki. We have, wired and wireless, gear from Meraki, which was purchased by Cisco. And we've really been happy with it. It gives us a lot of flexibility and it's something I'm still learning quite a bit about, but, you know, we have in our middle school, we have all the classrooms in a single building and a large, large number of cameras. And so anyway, one of the things that, we were able to talk about and figure out this summer is, hey, we have some extra fiber pairs not being used. Why don't we go ahead and increase the, fiber connectivity to this, you know, middle school building. And it was amazing how much that, you know, is actually able to boost the wireless connectivity. And we've done the same thing in our lower division building where we've had some slower speeds. And so there's other buildings where I'm working on that as well. And so we are developing a multi-year plan where we'll be able to upgrade our fiber and we're currently, we have our core switch, which is the main switch that our, WAN ports or the ports to the outside commodity internet come into. And then all of our, connections from all of our buildings come into that runs at 10 gigabits. Per second, and all the rest of our switches are 1 gigabit. And eventually, you know, we're going to go up to a 10 gigabit network and, you know, looking at how that's going to, happen and also just, you know, tracking the packets. Oh my gosh. If you would like to be incredibly intimidated, try to pick up the piece of software called Wireshark. And then, you know, attend a webinar and try to jump into understanding this. Wireshark is a packet analysis tool, which is incredibly powerful, but it really does seem a little bit like learning Chinese in terms of, you know, jumping into, you know, reading all of the information that it has. And so that's something that I am continuing to work on and struggle with is, you know, learning more about our network, how it's set up. How can I peer into the network, you know, into the darkness of, you know, these connections, which we have some visibility with some of the dashboard tools, but, you know, there's other kinds of traffic that, you know, traverse our network that we don't necessarily have an accurate graph of. And, you know, what are the tools, like Wireshark or others, you know, that can give us visibility into, traffic and where we have bottlenecks and, you know, where we may need to look at increasing our connectivity or where we may have something, you know, misconfigured. One of the things that I've learned is that, you know, just having, if your network, as many have in the past, has been, you know, pieced together, you know, bit by bit and, you know, some of, or maybe all of, you know, wiring connections, some of those have been crimped and cabled by, you know, staff, not necessarily, you know, outside contractors. And even if they're done by outside contractors, you know, they can make mistakes as well as far as wiring sequences and how they put things together. You know, you can have a misconnected wire, like Ethernet wire, you know, that can cause a loopback or cause, you know, something happening on your network that can really, you know, throw things for a loop. And, well, I guess I'm using the word loop maybe more in that sentence than I had intended. But, you know, you can have some, you know, real problems with connectivity and bandwidth and say, what the heck is going on? You know, I don't see why this is happening. And it can be, you know, caused by hardware issues as well as, you know, by the usage issues that you have, whether those are cameras or, you know, people streaming video or whatever that they're doing. And so, one of the things I'm very excited about and hope to, have activated hopefully over Christmas. We were working on this for the summer, and this was one project that we didn't get finalized, was really connecting our Google domain, because we all have Google accounts as faculty, staff, and as students, to our firewall, and being able to have a greater level of visibility as well as management options for the utilization of the network that faculty and staff and students are doing. One little story that I'll share is pretty interesting. So we have a guest network, and we have the ability on that guest network to throttle individual connections. In other words, specify how much bandwidth an individual user, who is probably a student, but, you know, could be others. Generally, we try to help all our faculty and staff get over to that, to our faculty and staff wireless, which doesn't have, you know, bandwidth limits and these restrictions. Well, it was interesting because a few weeks ago, I was looking at how much of the bandwidth on our guest network was being taken by, well, just what were students using? You know, what was taken up the most? And well, these may or may not be open on your network, but Snapchat and Instagram and Facebook were taking huge amounts of bandwidth. And in particular, we don't currently have our Google domain connected to our firewall and our network. So I can see in our Meraki dashboard the device names. And so by those device names, sometimes I actually know who those students are and who those individuals are. Certainly for all of our, you know, computers that are ours, we name those, and we know, you know, what faculty and staff are assigned those computers, or where, what computer labs are in, etc. But anyway, there were a couple students, including some that I recognized, downloading, using almost 3/4 of a gigabyte of bandwidth just on Instagram and Snapchat. And this is something we do have Snapchat open because we've got filters for our school, and we want our students to be utilizing social media constructively and positively. But I did make some adjustments because there were, you know, in one of our buildings particularly, there were some issues that faculty were telling me about in terms of using YouTube and streaming some video. And so I made some adjustments. This is a pretty cool thing that Meraki lets you do, where I could do, I guess it's called a layer 7 rule. So layer 7, is the application layer. And so I could specifically say for Instagram and for Snapchat, you know, limit each user's, bandwidth that they have available to, you know, I don't remember exactly the number that I reduced it to. But basically it's like a straw that you're making smaller. And so anyway, that had a very noticeable and positive impact the next day. You know, students are still using those tools, are still available. But I would be hard for somebody to convince me that, you know, a student needs to use 3/4 of a gig of network connectivity bandwidth in the course of a day, a school day, you know, on Snapchat and Instagram. So managing those kinds of things, and then, you know, ultimately, like right now we have Netflix blocked on our network for all users, but when faculty would like to use Netflix, we can provide them with a password and they can log in and be able to utilize it. That's something that we have tracked and, you know, gotten some data on. But in addition to, you know, learning about packets and I don't think going to be becoming an expert on Wireshark. I sat in on a webinar here in the last 2 weeks that was just, you know, sounded like it was in Chinese, a bit. I mean, better than that, but lots of acronyms and terms and, it's, you know, stuff that's just, I don't understand all that. I'm also, you know, I've also signed up for a webinar series, and I need to go look at the first one that happened, I think, a week ago for our firewall. We have a Smoothwall firewall. That's a company based out of the UK, and our contract on our previous SonicWall firewall had gone up last year, and we needed to get a new one, did a lot of research, talked to a lot of different folks, and, you know, found people very, really happy with the reporting and flexibility, as well as Google integration that the SmoothWall firewall offered them. And so anyway, that's another thing that I am aspirationally struggling with and working to understand and be able to utilize, not to, you know, just overly restrict things and try to crimp everybody's style, but to, you know, empower learning, ultimately to be able to, you know, give even more flexibility and options to our faculty and, you know, to give as much bandwidth and as much, you know, connectivity, opportunities for our students as we can as well. We did notice last year, you know, there was a lot of gaming going on, especially during, you know, some open times and, you know, those figuring out, you know, how we can utilize our bandwidth. We don't get E-rate, don't apply for E-rate, which is a discount program here in the United States where, schools, you know, depending upon, the socioeconomic situation of their students and families can receive, you know, discounts and sometimes substantial discounts on what they pay for, internet bandwidth as well as equipment and things like that. So, you know, we're operating in an environment as everyone is where people are wanting more bandwidth, wanting more connectivity. But we have of course a limited amount. And so anyway, those are all the more geeky things that I find myself being able to wrestle with. And I really do enjoy, you know, that aspect of my job and my role at our school. You know, it's a, there are, as probably many of you listening to this podcast know, there are some real benefits to, you know, having kind of a small staff or being a staff of one, as some people are, in terms of autonomy and flexibility and the, you know, what you can do. But, you know, we've only got so many minutes in the day and we all have to make choices about what we're going to be able to do and how we spend our time. So I will direct you to the show notes for tonight's podcast, where probably most importantly, you can get a link to Dr. Mitch Resnick's new book on the pedagogy of lifelong kindergarten creative learning. I'll put in a link to information about this creative learning class. I think it's going to be a MOOC, massively online open course, that MIT's Lifelong Kindergarten Group is going to be offering coming up here in October of 2017. And you can link to Tony Vincent's Classy Graphics. There's still time, I think, now to sign up. This is still just week one of the class. And anything else that I happen to mention. So if you have found any of these ideas of value, I would love it if you would let me know. Reach out to me on Twitter. I am W. Fryer on Twitter. You can also leave a comment on this podcast, which you are hopefully finding from my primary blog, which is speedofcreativity.org. So until next time, thank you for tuning in, and I wish you luck in your own EdTech aspirational struggles. And would, encourage you to not only reach out to me, but, you know, reach out to others. This is one of the best ways we are able to meet challenges and figure out workarounds and new things to do is by connecting with each other and being able to share, whether that's through social media like Twitter or Facebook or the old ways like blogs and podcasts, which have been around for a little bit longer. Not that much. They're still pretty new in terms of media and technology, but different tools, different platforms have different affordances. And certainly I love the fact that podcasts give us a chance to have, you know, potentially a much more in-depth insight into the mind of others and the challenges and hopefully the solutions and strategies that they may be using to meet whatever kinds of challenges they have in their life. So, thanks for tuning in. And until next time, stay safe and stay savvy.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.